Episode 334.
But when you're out really far away from places, you're going to drive 500, 600, 700 miles to go anywhere. You'll do it in one day. Just boom, off I go. When we can do that electrically, we're in. We're almost there. We are so close to getting 300 or 400 miles of range and charge it up in 15 minutes and keep going. When that happens and the price of lithium continues to go down, you know, everybody who actually buys a car, they're buying it because it's a lifestyle. It kind of represents who you are. I get that part. But when your wife takes a look at the money at the end of the month and said, wait a minute, you're paying $600 a month on gasoline and we can buy an electric car, lease one for half of that, the party's over.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, aftermarketers, throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriato here with the second interview with Deb and Craig Van Battenberg. Our first outing was in episode 116 in May 2016, about 2 years previous. A lot has happened with hybrid and electric vehicles since then, and my top reason to have Deb and Craig back was to get an update and talk with Craig about an article he wrote for Auto Inc. magazine about the future. He provides his perspective on what the industry will look like in 30 years. I'll also have the link to the article on the show notes page at remarkableresults.biz/E334. Welcome. With thanks to Federal Mogul Motor Parts for their support of these interviews. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on-demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Now find out more, fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, please see the new series recently created. It's a must-listen compilation for automotive technology students. It's called Automotive Students Must Listen. Now share this with your educator friends and all automotive tech students. It is meant to spread the real-world stories about the strength of independence and offer a real-world view of our beloved industry to help our students learn about the aftermarket. Find over 50 episodes for students at remarkableresults.biz/student. Hey, welcome new Facebook friends Thomas Hayes, Mike Glantz, Brent Bowman, Chris Stockenbeil Pierce, and new LinkedIn connections Tommy Keeter, Fritz Parman, and David Krisman. I'm honored to connect with you. Find all social links remarkableresults.biz/social. And don't forget about a select group of Town Hall Academy podcasts that are available for AMI elective credits. Go to remarkableresults.biz/AMI. Now for their second appearance is Deb and Craig Van Battenberg from Auto Career Development Center, ACDC. They've been doing hybrid training since 2000 and EV training since 2008. Now, if you get a chance, listen to Deb and Craig on their original episode. It was number 116 from May of 2016. I'll put a link to it on the show notes page along with bios and today's talking points. I wanted to pick Deb and Craig's thoughts on the future of the internal combustion engine and the impact of hybrids and electric vehicles. If you know Deb and Craig, you know they are not without their strong convictions to an all-electric future. So this episode will help stretch your thinking and, I believe, help you prepare for the future. With everything that GM, Volvo, and Ford have been saying, it is a perfect time to get Craig to share how he sees the future shaping up. He is well-connected throughout the aftermarket, OE channels, and worldwide, and both Deb and Craig are sought-out speakers and trainers. Here's just three key talking points. Craig believes in zero emissions and that climate change is real. Technicians at high school and college levels must learn to work on hybrid and electric cars. And the transition from ICE, internal combustion engines, will happen faster than anyone knows, and the driver will be the cost of a barrel of oil. Now, buckle up for a fast-paced and inspired automotive aftermarket talk radio interview with Deb and Craig Van Battenberg. Another warm welcome to Craig and Deb Van Battenberg from the Auto Career Development Center, ACDC, hybrid training. Craig, back in 2000, you started to do hybrid training. Did people think you were crazy?
People always thought I was crazy. When I started my repair shop, December 20th, which is the same day as my wife's birthday, by the way, we celebrate both, December 20, 1977, there was a Honda Civic. The Accord had been out for 1 year. I'm working at a Honda motorcycle shop that I really liked to work at, and they went bankrupt in the middle of a busy summer season. I don't know how you do that. So I hopped on my CB400F, my lovely little Honda motorcycle that I still have, and I'll be driving tomorrow. It's 43 years old, this motorcycle. Still looks brand new. And I went up to Nova Scotia, off to Prince Edward Island, and said, what am I going to do with my life? My best job, I'm 26 years old, my best job I've ever had, the guy's bankrupt. The place is closed up. What am I going to do? And I had no idea. I wasn't thinking of becoming a fisherman, but that wasn't going to work. So I said, okay, I'll go back and I'll just do what I like to do. I like working on Honda motorcycles. I like working on Honda cars. So we started Van Battenberg's Garage. It wasn't incorporated at the time, just me and a two-bay garage. And we started doing Hondas. And we did Datsun and Toyota as well for the first year. But we got busy right away because I was honest. I was good. I was intelligent. I was having fun with people. And so the business took right off. So we dropped everything except Honda cars, probably within a year and a half, straight right with Honda. And yeah, people thought I was nuts.
Yeah, you became a specialist way before it was ever trendy.
Well, I was afraid of doing anything else. I only wanted to do what I was good at. I didn't want to bring in a Ford and Chevy, even though they could make a lot of money, because back then the cars broke down a lot. They're much better now. I didn't care about making money. What mattered to me was doing something that people would appreciate, doing what I knew, and also doing the thing I believed in. There's this guy, Sichiro Honda, who started the Honda company in 1948. He had a seventh grade education. I barely made it out of high school. He was short. I was short. He was bald. I was bald. I said, wow, there's a lot going on here. Maybe if he can make an incredible car company go, I could make a little two-bay garage work. You know, something about being short and bald. I don't know what it is. You
brought
go
that
with it.
Association thing together.
That happened.
Hey, I want to remind the audience that we were together in episode 116 in May 2016, just about 2 years ago now from recording. It was a great episode. Tons of people listened to it. And since, the world has really changed in 2 years to such a degree that hybrids and EVs seem to be really taking hold, really becoming the point of the plow.
And not just hybrids, it's electric cars. It's people saying, you know what, I can drive a Chevy Bolt, B-O-L-T, which I call a T-Lob, which is Bolt spelled backwards. Because General Motors, for some stupid reason, names a car a Volt and another one a Bolt.
Yeah.
It's not exactly alike. So we bought a T-Lob. We have one now. But in 2 years since we talked, you can get a car in Massachusetts, which is a $10,000 incentive from the government, both federal and state. So a $38,000 car is now a $28,000 car. It fits four people comfortably, five in a pinch, little hatchback, and I can go over 200 miles all day long before I even have to think about getting a battery charge. That makes the car a great car.
The electric car range, what do you see? Is it only 200 today, or do you see it being pushed?
Oh, it just keeps getting better. When we bought, here's the price way of thinking this. When I bought the Chevy Volt with a V, I paid $46,000. I got $7,500 off of federal taxes. That's still around. So let's call that a $35,000 or $38,000 car. The battery pack, they estimate, cost $15,000 to build. And you could go 37 miles. That's it. Electricity before the gas engine kicked in. Now, fast forward only 8 years. That $15,000 for a Chevy T-Lob, a Bolt, is now $10,000. And the range went from 37 miles to 238 EPA miles. In other words, the price of the lithium-ion cells has been lowered by 80 to 90% in 8 years. So you can go 500 miles on a charge, but the amount of batteries you'd put in there would be cost prohibitive and very heavy.
Have we topped out at 200 to 230, or are we going to get to 400 or 500 in the future soon?
I think economically people will be happy with 300. If you can drive 200 miles, time to stop, take a break. If you smoke, have a cigarette. If not, hit the John, get a cup of coffee. If you can charge your car up in 15 minutes and get another 200 miles of range, that's doable. I think people can live with that. But you're never going to get the same amount of capacity of energy that you do in a gallon of gasoline or diesel in a battery. They just physics say that won't happen.
Deb, how do you keep up with Craig? I mean, is basically you guys must know each other after all these years of marriage, and you anticipate all the things that he's got going on and that he does. Are you the person who puts this guy on track?
Oh, no. He is definitely the leader. I'm just the person all over the place. You know, we say every morning when we get up, we chart the day and we just go at it full blast. So we're both Sagittarians. We're both very energetic. We're both very committed to the same things. So that keeps us on track.
I need to compliment you, Deb, on your writing skills. Everyone needs to go back, and you've read Deb in the past. Most recently, in Auto Inc. magazine, she does a lot of writing for them. In fact, you were telling me about an article you have coming out. Is it going to be in the next issue? Is it going to be in the May, June?
It should be in May, June.
Oh, great. Good. There's going to be a little paragraph on me in there, too. I had seen it come out on one of the awards that I recently won. And so what's the title of this article?
Stress as a Motivator.
Wow.
So I told Carm when they asked me to do it, I said, this is hilarious. Me, the all-nighter queen, you're asking me to talk about stress as a motivator? I'm a pro. So I start the article out that way, by giving my own personal experiences.
Do you have the same passion that Craig has when it comes to hybrids and EVs?
I really do. I was just in Rockport, which is a shore town north of Boston, over the weekend. And 1 year ago there, I spoke at the climate change rally. And I spoke about automotive, and I had our Chevy Volt there with a big orange cone on the top of it and flyers for people. And I was so amazed because at the end of my speech, a huge, I mean, really 20 plus women lined up to speak to me because they wanted to speak to a woman. They wanted to ask their questions. They were curious. And it was a wonderful experience.
What a dynamic duo you guys are, you know, the Batman and Robins of our industry. When I think about what GM said, Craig, when they outlined the all-electric path to zero emissions, and I read that article and I read that news line out of Detroit, it was probably a year ago, I said to myself, self, you may be driving an EV before you leave this great world. And I said that not because I was against it, but I think the inertia is going to be there that one day when I want to go out and buy a new car, I'm going to have choices in the world of electric vehicles that I never had before. And I think I'm going to figure out that the internal combustion engine may not be totally 100% part of my world. And it doesn't matter what's under the hood. The fact of the matter is because of what Volvo and GM said, do you look back, you know, in the year 2000 when you started all this stuff and say, I figured it out?
No, I'm really not that arrogant, believe it or not. I can be a little cocky around my attitudes around science. So I was out in California over the weekend doing a teacher's conference in Salinas, California. And of course, there's a lot of EV mandates there. There's a lot going on environmentally. But, you know, everybody there realized that California, particularly because of the EV mandate they have, is going to have to go zero emissions. We also talked about fuel cells. And I actually hired a fellow. We haven't gotten an agreement yet, but he wants to do it. I won't mention his name, but he used to work for Honda and Toyota as a technical trainer, recently got laid off. They're consolidating, and Toyota moved to Texas, as you may know. A lot of jobs were lost in California. I have a bias against fuel cells, and I'm writing a college textbook that shouldn't be biased. So I figured I am not going to write this chapter. I talked to this gentleman, can you write me a chapter for my new college textbook that comes out in August about fuel cells? Because I don't want my bias to show up, and it would. But zero emissions are where we need to go. There's two options, a fuel cell car or an electric car. That's probably another story for another one of these programs. Think about it this way. If the world is really in peril, and you happen to be correct, me and a lot of people, that climate change is real, and then you have two options. You have the option of it's not real, and we do nothing. Okay, so if we look at it, it's not real, right? And we do nothing, then we're going to continue to flood and have just a horrific mess. What if climate change is not real, but we do everything we can and find out it's not real? What happens? The world gets more efficient. That's the worst problem.
It doesn't matter what you believe in climate change, having zero emissions, if we have the technology to do it, why wouldn't we do it?
Well, we don't do it because there's competing forces called oil companies. I mean, if your living depends on you to believe that oil is not going to harm the planet, keep pumping as much as you can. We burned 1 trillion barrels of oil. We've got 10 trillion left in the earth. Now we've only gone, what, less than 10%. And we've already got this much climatic problems. So it isn't so much arrogance, but I feel very, very strongly that if we don't train technicians to work on these cars, and that starts at the college level, the high school level, if we don't bring the people in and they're ready for this, when the world does get worse, and it will if we don't do something, then how are we going to promote electric cars when there's nobody around to fix them?
I believe you would agree that being a top tech is real hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers. There, you can get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. When online is your perfect way to learn, do it with Guru's 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of training course options. And with the Guru's on-the-go technology fleet, they bring the latest products and demos right to your shop. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards Loyalty Program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts' brands. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Gurus training, support, and get in on the rewards. You've always counted on Moog to keep you ahead of the pack when it comes to chassis innovation. Well, they've done it again. Most recently launched is the Moog ball joint with a pre-installed integral dust boot. It's designed exclusively for compression-loaded suspension systems, providing superior strength and durability for these types of vehicle applications. The dust boot is made from higher strength materials and comes pre-installed, saving you time because it's easier to install. It also has a larger contact area against the stud, which makes a more effective seal. For your customers, the unit uses Moog's powdered metal gusher bearing that provides longer life and controlled radial and axial movement. You get the industry's leading coverage of 10,000 SKUs, including 4,600 for foreign applications. Hey, you've been installing Moog confidently for years, and now you know why. You did something so interesting. I think it was in April. You wrote an article for Auto Inc.
That was actually written in December. I take December off pretty much from work. Deb and I are both born in December. We go on a cruise. We try to enjoy ourselves. And that's a time when I try to reflect. Every December as a business owner, I think it's just good in life to sit back and say, well, what kind of year did I have? Am I happy with my life? Am I happy with who I am as a person? How's my family? How's my business? So December is when I stop and reflect and make any major changes that I want to in my life. This year, I'm going to ride my motorcycle more often. I'm going to have a nice ride tomorrow. It's going to be sunny here in Massachusetts. And so I made some changes, and I'm happy with them. I made some changes last year. But it's a good time to write an article like that. And it was well received. And when I first sent that to John Clark, who's the editor for Auto Inc., said, this is what I was looking for. I said, oh. He says, I'm not sure this is going to really be a good article for us. And I said, well, think about it for a little while. I can write a second one. I was way ahead of schedule, which people like. When I write for them, I never run behind. I'm always there. And I said, think about it, because I really think there's something in this. And he was, about a week later, he said, yeah, we'll print it just the way it is. I said, well, let me know the feedback, you know, because when you think, if you really read that article and you're John Clark, the editor, you're risking annoying some of your advertisers, because the major advertisers in any automotive publication, I don't care where they are, they're based on an internal combustion engine. BG Chemicals, and I have permission to tell you this, BG makes induction cleaners and all types of things. They're a customer of ours. But when they saw the news last year that Volvo and GM, Volvo came out first, this is June or July of last year, 2017, that they were not going to put a whole lot more investment in internal combustion and had more electric, BG CEO, who I know very well, who's met with me before, said, okay, we need to do something. That's all I can say about BG. Look for some news later this year and find out what they're up to. But any company that makes their living based solely on internal combustion engines right now should be worried. That's what I mentioned. They should be freaking out, because the transition from internal combustion to electric could happen faster than any everybody knows. And the factors that will drive that is a price of a barrel of oil.
GM in the article, Craig says, they will be the 20 new electric vehicles that they'll launch by 2023.
And you don't need a new platform for each one. You can use the same electric motor, the same inverter, all those things, very interchangeable.
Just go to the marketing side of that whole decision. When you walk into a GM dealership and you see choice, and the choice happens to all be electric, by the way, but you have different models and, you know, different lifestyles, different looks. I think when more of that starts happening, believe you me, I believe the trend is going to go heavy and hard.
Yeah, and the Midwest, of course, is full of big SUVs and trucks, and I get that. I grew up in Utah. Everybody had a pickup truck. If you wanted to go anywhere in Utah, you had to go across the mountains to Denver, or you're going to have to drive to San Francisco or Las Vegas. I mean, you're middle of nowhere. When you're in the middle of nowhere, sorry to anybody listening from Utah, but when you're out really far away from places, you're going to drive 500, 600, 700 miles to go anywhere. You'll do it in one day. Just boom, off I go. When we can do that electrically, we're in. We're almost there. We are so close to getting 300 or 400 miles of range and charge it up in 15 minutes and keep going. When that happens and the price of lithium continues to go down, you know, everybody who actually buys a car, they're buying it because it's a lifestyle. It's kind of represents who you are. I get that part. But when your wife takes a look at the money at the end of the month and said, wait a minute, you're paying $600 a month on gasoline and we can buy an electric car, lease one for half of that, the party's over. You can make the fuel on your rooftop. You can't do that with gasoline.
What a great point. The article that I referenced that you wrote for Auto Inc. in March, April, the title of it was When the Industry Goes All Electric.
Scary.
So I grabbed that article and I read it and I said, well, you must have a link to a major crystal ball, because you basically said to anyone that's earning their living in this industry, things are going to happen. I want you to think this through really hard and start thinking about business model changes, everyone.
I ran a repair shop for 26 years. And like I mentioned before, we closed it down in 2004 to go strictly hybrid EV training. And that's where I'll be heading after this little interview, because we're doing a training there, a 7-day training called Up Your Voltage. It starts on Saturday. So we're setting up, getting ready. But I had to change my business model twice in the 26 years because the internet came out. So I had to be right out there with a website. I had to be very tech savvy to bring customers in. And I've closed the business. I don't regret closing it. I had a good run at it. I'm actually probably better suited for this job than I was that job. But either way, it's not going to stay the same. One thing we could be absolutely sure of, things are going to change. They're always going to change. And you better, if you're in this industry, you've got to change with it or your shop will be closed down. You'll be a dinosaur.
Basically, in the article, you're saying hydrogen's expensive and it's probably not going to last.
Well, And again, I'm biased against hydrogen.
Okay.
And I have my reasons,
all right,
which is why I've hired another fellow to write the chapter for me, because I'm writing a college textbook that's just been a year in the making. And it's not a textbook. It's an entire program a college can buy. Because what's happening with all that Volkswagen diesel money, I don't know if you're familiar with, you know about the diesel scandal, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they've now settled. So Massachusetts has $179 million that's going to be administered throughout our beautiful state to do lots of things with it for the environment, one of which can be to help educate students or put in charging infrastructure. California got a lot of money because the more diesel Volkswagens you had, that's how they distributed the money. Tesla is in Fremont, California. That's where they build cars, right? Governor Brown obviously loves Elon Musk because they're in the same state. So as I'm out there, I literally flew back yesterday or the day before. So there's a mandate in California for every technical college, get me technicians to build and fix electric cars. Without it, Tesla won't survive. So I'll be spending a lot of time in California for sure.
So this article, I have to take some key points from it and bring it up and talk about it, because I thought it was a really well-written article as you challenged, where are we going? This was a 30-year ahead view. And you basically say the future's bright if you decide to change with it.
We drilled oil, if my history is somewhat correct, around 1816 or 1830 in Pennsylvania, they discovered oil. Didn't know what to do with it. So here we are roughly, 200 years later. We're ruining the planet. We are destroying the environment. We're drilling evidently in the Arctic. I hope that doesn't really happen. So we really have a game here that's not working. We had the huge oil spill in the Gulf. I mean, we could go on and on. Everybody knows oil's not great. A lot of times when I'm teaching, people ask me, how did you learn about hybrid cars? That's asked a lot. And then also, how did you get in the business? And this is a really short story, but it's worth explaining. In 1972, the EPA was created. I'm working in downtown Worcester at a motorcycle shop called Richard's Honda. They just sold motorcycles only because Honda didn't sell automobiles. Richard Honda, Richard Lundgren, the owner, came up to me and said, Craig, you worked for Volkswagen last winter, because I would get laid off every fall because of the winter. I'd get laid off and I'd go work for a car dealership. Or if I had a little money, I'd just go on vacation in my 59 Volkswagen bus, because I'm a hippie, going down to Arizona. Either way, he comes back. He said, Craig, I just got the franchise for the Honda Civic. Comes out in 6 months. I'm going to send you to New Jersey. Honda's building a training center to learn to work on the Honda Civic. So off I went. It was a one-week class. While I'm there learning about the Honda Civic that's coming out in the fall so I could have to learn about the car, the first 4 hours of class was spent talking about the EPA regulations, what's going on with catalytic converters, which weren't out yet, and pictures of smog in L.A. So what happened is they brainwashed me into believing that cars were bad, oil is evil, we're all going to die. I was 21. I'm 67. I don't feel any different. That moment in time when I was so young, it stuck with me today just like it was yesterday. Oil is bad. Cars are evil. But we have to move around. So what better way of doing this with electricity from solar panels and wind energy? We can do this. Also, the population since that time till now, we've added another 2 billion people on the planet. Deb and I are both the same age. We grew up with Volkswagen Beetles that had 3 bumper stickers: ban the bomb, zero population growth, and question authority. We haven't done too well with any 3 of those.
Hey, Deb, what'd you do in the Volkswagen bus?
We didn't get married till we were 39, but tell them about your Corvair or something interesting you used to drive.
Well, I'll tell you this. When I married Craig, he said, Deborah, you've owned every manufacturer's answer to the Edsel. You are not qualified to pick a vehicle from this point forward. My history was a Corvair, followed by a Renault 4, followed by a Volkswagen made in Germany that caught on fire, followed by another Renault.
Oh, boy.
And then I made the ultimate. Oh, I had a Toyota. But
that was a good one.
All right.
Then I had a Hyundai XL. And Craig said, that's the end of it, Deborah. Not qualified.
When I met her, she just bought a brand new Hyundai XL and put a car phone in it. I think the car phone was better than the car. On a piece of junk. And they've come a long way, I must say. Hyundai's
yeah,
done well.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, so we have to divide up the labor in our house.
One of the things you said in the article was about licensing for techs. You predict it's going to become national law. Your impetus about that.
Well, what I actually said in the article that I had to question my own writing. I said, so I'm predicting, and if you read the article, it says in 2022 this happened and that happened. So it's an article like it is 2038 and you're looking, or 2040, and you are looking back. And what I said was, a young girl who's studying automotive to be an automotive technician has been electrocuted and died in the classroom, caught on video. The fact that her father was a U.S. senator allowed us to have a licensing for automotive technicians within 3 months. And I'm thinking, that's pretty strong, right? But I'm thinking, I want to make a point. And how do you make a point? By making an extreme example of something. This is how it's done, right? Whether you're writing or speaking. But it's long overdue that technicians are licensed. I was just, I'm always being trained as well. I need to get my 609 license. You probably don't know what that is. But a 609 license is for air conditioning. Oh, wait a minute. It was your podcast that I was listening to a week or two ago. Yeah, you did it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With Peter Cole from Neutronics. And so I had my entire staff, by the way, gathered around our lunch table. We really, really enjoyed that. It was a great job. But the point was made that in the United States, a do-it-yourselfer can buy refrigerant, which is destroying the planet, and put it in their car, but a professional needs a license and can't. when we have such a divided group, and I think Peter Cole made the perfect example. He said, I understand a government not regulating at the point where you can't change your own oil. I never even thought about this ever. You know, Peter Cole's thought process was so good. We're buddies, and I like the way he thinks. He said, you shouldn't regulate something that a do-it-yourselfer would do for preventive maintenance, but you should regulate something when a do-it-yourselfer doesn't do it hardly ever. It really needs work. And when you don't do it right, you damage the environment. That needs to be regulated.
Yeah, it should.
So we're way overdue, way, way overdue. And I think we'll get there. And I think electric cars are going to drive that, because you really should know what you're doing when you have 400 volts in your hands. 60 volts will kill you. You don't fool around with stuff. You need to be trained. And I think you need to be licensed.
So much of what you've learned since you've been teaching hybrids and EVs is the fear factor. I remember reading you talking about that.
Yeah, well, fear stands for false evidence appearing real. F-E-A-R, right? False evidence appearing real. Automobiles that are, when you're well-trained on an EV, there's no danger. If you go back, you might want to do this. I don't have time. Go to U.S. labor statistics and take a look at all industrial deaths. Okay, there's a section for automotive, and you'll see the number one cause of deaths of automotive technicians is from a fire created by gasoline. So as soon as we get rid of gasoline completely, diesel's not as bad at all. As soon as we get rid of gasoline completely out of a shop and out of a car, the safety factor goes down. Or should I say goes up. It's going to be a lot safer in a world without gasoline for so many reasons. But technician safety, gasoline and light bulbs do not mix.
You are predicting what the shop of the future is going to look like. And I loved your analysis of, you know, this kind of laneway idea.
I'm fortunate enough to have an international business. So we've hosted a gentleman by the name of Mark. Deb, you can help me with this. I forget his last name right now, who runs the electric motor rebuilding company in Barcelona. Do you remember his last name? No. Okay. Well, we'll go with his front name and you'll think of it. So his first name is Mark, and he runs a business in Barcelona. He rebuilds big electric motors for paper mills and for ski areas. And I'm going to say it's Mark Cologne because I just can't think of the right name. So Mark
has
come over.
His company is Servio.
Oh, you know what? I think I may have met him with you at Apex this year.
Yes, we brought
him. I remember. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So Mark's a great guy. He's a forward thinker as well. So he came to the United States twice to work with me. Then we brought him off to Industry Week I want him to meet people. There's not a single electric motor rebuilder in the United States that will rebuild the motor, the stator part, if you want, on an electric car. So you keep buying new stuff. Makes no sense. So he's learning, and I think he's already taught himself how to do this. But one of the things he told me that was in the article is because he works on these big electric motors, and when you have motors inside a factory, you can have 500 motors moving things around, conveyor belts, all this stuff. So there's a little chip made in Finland, no bigger than your fingernail, that's literally glues on the back of this electric motor and on the front where the bearings are. It has a small battery. It transmits a signal that will tell you the vibration and temperature. We already know how much current and voltage is going in. To make a long story short, they can now predict with big data, as all this stuff goes to a server that goes in the cloud, when that electric motor bearing is going to fail. Because when it fails, the whole assembly line is shut down. That's available. They're using it in Europe. I don't think it's here. So by having an international company, I'm able to visit with people from all over the world. They come here as well. We visit. We have lunch. We have dinner. Not always a classroom conversation. It's a conversation because we have something similar. So the article is saying this, that when you head over to your garage, the car is going to drive itself. You're probably going to want to jump in the car because some wonderful woman like Deb will be sitting there taking care of you. There'll still be people. We'll still be drinking coffee. We're still going to tell bad jokes. And that humor interaction needs to stay. And I think the younger generation knows that, even though we joke about them on their phone all the time.
So we're going to have relationships with our customers still.
Absolutely. Okay. There's no doubt. That's going to really be the key point to keeping your customers. When your car shows up and drops you off at the front door and you go in and you see Deb or you see Carm or whoever's working there, you're going to drip a cup of coffee. You're going to talk about your car. You're still a person. The car is going to head over to what looks like a car wash. It'll get on a little track. It'll move very slowly down the way. And then technicians, and I'm talking with whatever technology they have then, but they'll have all this big data downloaded. They'll know that the right rear wheel bearing on this car. We'll still have wheels. We'll still have bearings. The asphalt roads aren't going to get changed. We're driving the same potholes right here in Worcester. The roads will probably be worse. I don't know. So they'll know what to look for. And they'll go down this conveyor belt. You'll maybe do it every 5,000 miles. It takes 20 minutes tops. There'll be a cabin air filter because you still want to keep the cabin. There'll be things that we still recognize. But when something, and if it all gets a nice clean bill of health, it goes out the other side. You finish your coffee. You say thanks. You swipe your credit card, which is embedded in your fingernail, whatever they do back then, right? But we'll still pay for it. Off we go. But if they see something wrong, then there will be a service bay. I'm guessing two or three bays. Kind of similar to what we have today. And the car will be brought in the service bay, and then a technician has to actually fix the car. What's going on today in 2018, if you need a battery pack for any hybrid or electric car, you're going to go to a dealership, pay a lot of money, not that they're not worth it, but you can go to independent shops. We have a group of qualified shops. We have a QSP program, about 90 shops all over the world where you can get your car serviced as well. So these shops are unique in the fact that they've all trained with us. And I'll give you a really perfectly good example. If somebody took three bolts out the end of a transmission on a 2009 Prius by mistake, thinking there was something behind there, it could be a technician could do it, could be a consumer, they've ruined the transmission. These little three bolts hold what they call a resolver, a special sensor, which says cannot be reset. You put an entire transmission in it, $4,000 repair. We can reset that. We spent 8 years developing and working on this. We don't tell people how it works other than our qualified shops. So if you had a $4,000 repair at a Toyota dealership, you go to one of our shops and you get that fixed for $400, let's say. Wow, that's 10% because we can fix it instead of replace it. Those days will still be going on in 30 years. There'll be geeky, smart guys figuring stuff out at independent shops. ASA will still be in business, getting their cars fixed cheaper than a dealership. And that's what we need, competition.
Okay, you still see a bright future, but you may not see as many shop owners because I think you're going to need a lot more customers per capita, right?
Right. When I ran my business for 26 years, the first 5 years I was just an idiot fixing cars, didn't know what I was doing. Then I hired Joe Scheinfeld, my accountant. I was 31 years old. I also got married at that time, different woman. That was a mistake, but that's another story. Anyway, I got a lot of help.
Wait a minute, Deb. Tell us the story. No.
She knows my ex-wife. Everything's fine. All right. It's good. Unfortunately, too many men have that story to tell. At any rate, so what I learned was I needed about 1,000 loyal customers to keep one technician busy 50 weeks a year. I don't think that's changed much. So, and because not all the customers are loyal, they get a coupon for oil change, they're gone somewhere else. So I needed 2,000 customers per technician. We had six bays, three really good technicians, a couple helpers that also helped out as a service advisor at dual role. And each technician had two bays, not one, two lifts, not one. Much more efficient. We were better that way. So I needed about 6,000 customers. Now, when you get 30 years from now and these cars are this good and they'll still break, they'll still need things they anticipate will happen. Technicians will still have to be geeks and figure stuff out. Righty tighty, lefty loosey will still be a thing. We need to know how to put the bolts on, right? And torque them. We'll still be doing that. But then you'll need, if you get 90% of this electric car, say a different way, if you have a gas car now and it goes 200,000 miles, okay, an electric car going 200,000 miles, there'll be so little work to do that instead of 1,000 or 2,000 customers, each technician needs 10,000 customers, which is why your repair shop looks like a car wash. It's got to go in one end and out the other because you got to move these things. You can't even drive them in, set them on a lift and back it out and make money on electric car service. There's nothing to do. So yes, we'll have fewer technicians. We'll have fewer shops because the market will demand fewer. We'll still be driving a lot of miles. Cars will be driving themselves. Body shops are in trouble, big trouble, because when we finally get autonomous cars working, and they're not working yet, we probably need to get them off the highway and do it on test tracks. I believe that's important. But when we stop hitting each other, what are body shops going to do? I work for the body shop industry. Every part of this industry is a customer of mine to some degree. And because I've done so many different things, and I was our ASA chapter president for 3 or 4 years, that I try to think like they do. I was just in Fort Worth, Texas 2 weeks ago. So my second time working for the heavy-duty truck industry. Well, now that Tesla is showing a Class A truck that'll tow the whole combined unit's 80,000 pounds, and if you've seen this, it accelerates like a sports car, they're worried. for good reason. They brought me down. I was a keynote speaker, which was a lot of fun, 2 weeks ago in Fort Worth. Got some good reviews on that one. But for 2 weeks, I had to think like a truck driver. For 2 weeks, I spent time at a truck stop and heading down to the local repair shop on Route 20 here in Worcester that repairs them to get feedback. I want to know how much did a brake job cost. It's $1,000 per wheel, per axle, every 40,000 miles. Electric cars have regenerative braking. There's a huge amount of money to be saved for the big trucking industry, and they don't buy a truck based on style. There's nothing going on. The trucking industry, it's all about money, period. They're going to save so much money. They'll move to electric trucks as fast as they can.
What happens with ExxonMobil kind of company in the future? They've got to do a shift, right?
They'll do. They already have. Shell owns, pretty sure Shell owns the largest infrastructure of charging stations in England than anyone else. They bought it last year. So, in fact, a long time ago, there's a company called Cobasys, C-O-B-O-Y-S, I think. Cobasys is a small company. It's out of business in Springboro, Ohio. And back in 2006, they were contracted by General Motors to build nickel metal hydride batteries for the Saturn V hybrid. Who owned Cobasys? Texaco. They didn't do so well. The batteries all leaked electrolyte, and General Motors went from Cobasys to Panasonic to buy batteries. But all the oil companies, they know. They know what's going on. They know climate change is real. They know their days are limited. Remember back when cigarettes didn't cause cancer? And every tobacco company said it didn't cause cancer. And there was this, you know, and this is in the 50s or 60s. They fought and fought and fought and fought, paid lobbyists to basically lie to politicians. What finally happened? The truth came out. And they got fined a bunch of money. It's the same thing with the oil companies.
Hey, did you ever watch an old movie from, say, the 50s? And everyone smokes in the movie.
Yes.
Everyone. The old TV shows, everybody smokes. Yeah. Did you ever feel your chest getting tight when you watched them old movies?
Have you ever watched Fast and Furious? Yeah. You know that whole sequel, Fast and Furious? Roger Rodas, who was driving the car that Paul Walker died in when these two guys died, was one of our customers. So we had a connection with Fast and Furious. And these two guys, Roger Rodas, God bless his soul, and Paul Walker, the star of the movie, they were buddies. They were billionaires, both of them. Well, Rodas was a billionaire. So we were working with that company, with them, the two of them, to put together a hybrid training franchise that never happened because of the car accident 5 or 6 years ago. What I learned from Roger Rodas, the self-made billionaire, is when you get into your late 30s and you've made your money just purely for making money, that you develop a conscience that maybe what we're doing isn't really advancing the common good. Maybe we're not really helping society. We're not building America and making it a great country. Maybe we're tearing it down. By promoting these fast cars for young kids, death rates are high, and that got the best of these guys. So they decided to open up Hybrid Haven, which is a company in Petaluma, make a franchise. Ed Root is one of my buddies. So we're all having meetings. Roger, Deb can tell you the same story. Probably her view of it. And so I was so inspired by these two guys that they were going to stop trying to promote gasoline burning hot rods in the Fast and Furious movies and try to get people to drive electric cars. Then they died. And the whole thing got snuffed out in one bad move of a throttle pedal. The spirit's still there. The people want to do the right thing. I really believe that. And until they have a chance to drive an electric car and see what it will do, Earth Day was last Sunday, a week ago. So me and the entire staff cleaned up. We have three electric cars, cleaned them all up, went to the Mass Audubon Society's Worcester branch. And we set them up in the parking lot and we let people drive cars. And we just talked to them about electric cars. And these are all nature lovers. And even the nature lovers were really a little resistant. I'm thinking, wait a minute, aren't we here to save the planet? It's Earth Day. Don't you want to drive my electric car? People to drive electric cars. They're all driving Subarus, you know, whatever.
Deb, you must be an incredible spokesperson when you're out with Craig. Do you go to most of the training events?
I really do. I go to almost everything. I feel confident to talk about the industry. I feel confident to talk about what we do. And, you know, pretty much what Craig reads, I read. I proof his articles. I work on the book. And I also am at a lot of conferences. I was at an incredible electric drivetrain conference in Montreal not that long ago. And one of the workshops I took was, why is it taking society so long to adapt to electric vehicles? And the woman that did the research was from Germany. And she took every other disruptive technology that's come along, starting with portable hair dryers. And then, you know, we had to switch from that. And then we had to switch to phones that could be lifted off their receiver. And then we went to microwaves, and it went on and on. And she had researched how long each adaptation took. And electric vehicles is taking so much longer than anything else that's come along. And why? And no one knows the answer. There were three different workshops on the same topic.
And no one could come up with a why.
Well, you know, they came up with results, like in California, where electric vehicles are so popular, there also is a gasoline car in the family. It might be a hybrid, but they had something else because, right, this was a year and a half ago. The range wasn't there yet. So mostly it came out that people are not informed. They're still afraid. And that holds people back from spending money.
Wasn't there 4.2 million either hybrid or EVs sold last year?
There's about 16 million, and let me give you a new term, EMEV, EMV. So EMV is something I created years ago so I could speak about cars without listing them all. So an EMEV is either an electric car, a hybrid car that plugs in, a plug-in hybrid, an electric car with a little gas engine in the back, or a fuel cell. What they all share in common is they're all zero emissions when they're electric, so an EMEV. So the answer to your question is there's about 16 million EMEVs worldwide. We have about 5.5 million EMEVs in the United States. We have close to 1 million cars with plugs in the side. They're the most popular one. If you look at Prius sales, they're down. But if you'll take a look at the plug-in cars, they're way up. You're a journalist. I'm a journalist. If you want to write a headline, you can really play with a bunch of numbers to get a headline that says hybrid sales are terrible. Well, okay, that's half the story. The other half is plug-in hybrids are way up, like 72%. Combine the two, they're up. So depending on your bias, you can make numbers up and make them make a point. I am biased, and I know that. So I try to be as factual as I can. If I say anything, go to Wikipedia, do whatever you do, fact check me, see if I'm off by anything at all. I don't want to be. I want the numbers to be dead on.
Does anyone ever come up to you at a conference and say, Mr. Van Battenberg, I like you, but I disagree with you?
It used to happen a lot. The bad news is people will take out some of their frustration on me, which is fine with me, if they are in love with oil for whatever reason, or if they're a climate change denier, which there's fewer and fewer of all the time. But you know what? I get along with everybody. No matter who they are, if they're upset with me, I'm very calm. No one will ever see me get excited in a public place.
You do excite a different kind of thinking. And when GM and Volvo say what they're going to say, we all need to take a stand. Do you think Marion Barry is going to lose her job because she says what she's doing?
Bill Ford had a hard time. Bill Ford Jr., back in 1998, was chairman of the board for Ford Motor Company. In 1999, they bought Volvo on his insistence. And the reason why Ford bought Volvo in 1999, Volvo had a hybrid technology ready to hit the road. If anybody has ever driven a Ford Escape hybrid, and you look under the hood, that's all Volvo's technology, every bit of it. So Bill Ford Jr., who is the great-grandson of Bill Ford, who I respect a lot. I've only seen him at conferences. I've never had a chance to chat with him. He went on to become president, I think in 2001 or 2002. Ford Motor Company's bleeding financially. He went and hired Alan Mulally. Bill Ford Jr. gave up his job to put someone in there who could financially save Ford Motor Company, Alan Mulally, who came in 2006, I believe 2006, and he saved the company. And I've had a chance to interview him once and then be in the room with him twice where he was visiting with people. Great guy. He's since retired from Ford Motor Company. But Ford Motor Company has done a lot of great things. Now, they've made a colossal mistake last week in the news. And I talked about it a lot when I was in California. They said they're not going to build any more passenger cars. They're going to have a small hatchback and a Mustang. But I think that's half the news because they said also they're going to have 20 new electric cars. So I think sometimes it gets misreported. Maybe the press release said Ford is going to build no more gasoline-powered sedans, but they are going to build electric sedans.
I think that entire headline was misread.
Misquoted. Yeah. But it was rewritten to sell papers and get people to click on a link. You and I know the way the media operates today, the media, it's not free press. It's bought and paid for. Not with me. You can't buy me. That's not going to happen. And you can't buy you.
Deb, where's AC/DC going in the future? You guys ever going to slow down? Are you going to build a bigger training center? What's going on?
Well, we're not going to build a bigger training center. We are staying as a boutique training center because, you know, having eight students or nine students, we've just made an improvement to add one. It gives us a lot of flexibility. We can really move quickly. We can say to a corporation that's looking for help about hybrids and EVs, sure, we can do a private class for you. We've got an opening in our training center. We can do something for four people, five people. We don't have to be dependent on something else. We can bring in our adjunct trainers. We have a great setup here in Worcester with the hotels and the restaurants and the transportation. So that's all good. We're also really lucky that we have a strong European business, because when things slowed up a year ago because of the political atmosphere, our European business was very strong. And so we pushed on that. And that gave us a lot of great feedback and nice money. So that's always good.
And they fly over, right? They come over.
Thursday, I got on a plane in Boston and I flew to California in the same amount of time it takes me to get to England. It's the same flight time. It's no big deal. Well,
so you're nimble and you're flexible and you like it like that.
And what I'll tell you why. If you want to train with us today, I'll back up. If you were a shop owner in the year 2004, the year I closed down my shop and went full time for hybrid training, we really pushed the envelope hard. And a big risk to close down a profit-making business to create a new one out of nothing, basically, 2004. If someone started training with us then, the learning curve was very small. There were two Priuses, there were two Hondas, and that was it. Four models, and they were almost the same. Okay. Now, if you want to train with me now, you're getting on a Saturn booster rocket, and I'm going to ship you up to the moon in 7 days. If a shop owner calls me today, we get requests literally every day, somewhere in the world. Our next class, we have people coming in from Brazil, Trinidad, Canada, and the United States. We have nine seats, by the way, because everything's hands-on. The point I'm trying to make is this. If you want to train with us now, you're not allowed to come to Worcester until you've done 30 hours of online training and read both of my books. And the new book comes out in August. There'll be three books to read. Don't show up. Because when you come into class, we're not going to go through theory. You need to learn that before you show up. You don't need me to learn theory. You read it in a book, or you can watch a video if you don't like to read. All that's done online, or we mail you the book. Period. Then when you get here, within the first hour, you're taking high voltage battery packs apart in the first hour of training to get over the fear. You're working on stuff that can kill you immediately, almost coming in. That's how we do it, because I need to get somebody trained right now. They waited way too long to enter into this marketplace, way too long. But everybody's waited way too long, so we had to redesign our company to make sure we can fit what they need. I know what I like. It doesn't matter what I like. What matters is what the student needs. So they come in, they learn, we have fun. Deb's a great hostess, as you could imagine. And you know what's really funny? When you get there, we're in the industrial park. Right across the street is a 24-hour ambulance service for UMass Medical Center, which is three blocks away. I said, guys, I put this training center here because we have an ambulance running 24/7 out there. So if you have any trouble, we'll just haul you out the door and off you go. It's kind of a joke. Some people take me seriously.
Are you living your dream that you exactly thought about?
I'm not living my dream. I don't believe in that. I think every day you get up, if you have a purpose, that's good. So to me, it's more, I just finished reading a great book by Robert Reich called The Common Good. You heard me use the word common good before. And I read it on my flight out and back. It was a short book. Really, really good. I said to the Southwest stewardess, flight attendant, I said, read this book. She's going to read it. I said, read this book because you're a corporation, Southwest, that gets what the common good is all about. You understand how to take care of your employees. You're a great company. They are. They're awesome because I've been flying Southwest for 30 years. I've watched them grow from nothing. I said, too many major corporations, it's all about the almighty dollar. They only take care of the stockholders. They don't take care of their employees. So, no, I'm not living a dream. What I'm trying to do is find a purpose that serves the United States first. You know, there's the world second, but it seems to be the same thing now, to really make this transition to get completely off of oil as fast as we can in a fun and interesting way. But my real purpose is foster kids. I think you know this. We have a nonprofit. It's part of our business. We're raising some more money again. Deb and I had a chance to meet with a woman in Rhode Island recently where we support foster boys 10 to 18. So I'm teaching out in California. We always have a slide. Picture of my son, Michael, when he was 4 years old. He's now 20. He'll be 27 this month. And, we talk about that a little bit, and there's always a lot of women. I encourage women to get in this business, and I always have to say, if you're a female, you'll get adopted no matter what age because you're so cute and adorable. Once you get 10, 11, 12, you're angry, you get big, these kids don't get adopted. So the dream is to get every kid a home that's in a foster home. The purpose is to try to save the planet. Now, how you put those two together, I really don't know. We won't do this forever. So let me tell you what the plan is. And Deb nailed it. But we have an internship program. It's not advertised. It's not on my website. We only accept American interns, although we did a lot with the Dutch government for years. We still have a bunch of Dutchmen coming in again. Oh, we'll be there. We'll be in Holland for 2 weeks in September. But we're hiring only American interns. And we're trying to hire disadvantaged guys. So right now, if you took a picture of our shop, you took a picture of our staff, the white people are the minority in our business. We have Asian, Hispanic, and African-American. Not because I'm picking for those guys. They just happen to come up here. But one of the things that I want to do as a company is have this company be inherited by the employees that are here. I didn't say bought. I said inherited, just like as if they were my own children. This is well known. I've already publicized this on a couple of emails. Everybody knows it. So the big outlook is I'll retire in 10 years. I'm 67. My health is excellent. So no medication. In fact, if you're late for class after the first day, you have to do 10 push-ups for every minute you're late, and I'll do push-ups with you. So I do a lot of push-ups because guys are always late for stuff. At any rate, so what we want to do is have ACDC continue, but I want the same philosophy. I want the same give back to the community. I want people to understand if you're just doing it for the money, you're doing it for the wrong reason. There's plenty of money here. Let's do it because there's something bigger going on than just you, something bigger going on than your pickup truck. There's something bigger going on than burning the last drop of oil. As it says in every mail I've ever sent to somebody, the Stone Age didn't end because we ran out of stones. We can move on. We don't have to burn up all the oil. There's other ways to do this. Let's just do it. So I'm not dreaming. I'm living it. I'm pretty grounded in the world. But it can be done. It can be done.
Yeah, we have something in common. We're both adopted parents. Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Excellent. So that's what really matters.
So, Deb, what's new with you? What's going on? What do we see that's going on in your world?
Well, I continue to write for Auto Inc., which inspires me. I lead a fair amount of workshops for a variety of clientele. I also work with adoptive moms, and I work for an agency that serves adoptive moms to give them relief and give them inspiration. And so I'm leading a workshop for them coming up very soon. And I love that. I'm passionate about it. And, you know, we have some grandkids and I haven't been around enough with them. So Craig went to California by himself and everyone asked, where's Deb? Where's Deb? Where's Deb? Well, I was on a runaway weekend with a bunch of women. But I also spend a fair amount of time with the grandkids these days.
Well, I'm going to become a grandparent for the first time very soon.
Wow, that'll be great. Your gray hair will even get grayer. Deb, you didn't mention the class you're teaching at NACAT.
That is true.
That's the big deal.
So last year I took a risk and put a topic out there for NACAT, for North American Council of Automotive Teachers, on gender identity. What do you do when your student left as Juan and comes back as Louise in the fall? So what do we do about all that? What do we do about bullying in the classroom? What do we do about one bathroom in the shop? What do we do with these issues? How is the administration handling this? Are you getting supported? Are you willing to stand up for it? So I was asked to teach it again this year at NACAT.
Well, good for you. Williamsport, Pennsylvania. I know. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to actually get there for one day because it's only 3.5 hours from where I live. Thank you so much, Craig and Deb Van Battenberg from Auto Career Development Center, ACDC. Cutting edge, great think, very passionate. And thanks for coming on for your second role here at Remarkable Results Radio.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And Carm, I want to thank you, not just from me, but for the industry for doing this. Because everybody I talk to out there in the world, they keep saying, wow, these Carm podcasts are just what I need. You're connecting people.
Thank you, man.
You really are. And it makes a difference. So we can get, because I have a viewpoint doesn't mean someone else doesn't have a valid viewpoint, which could be completely opposite of mine.
Thank you so much.
You need to be heard as well.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Deb and Craig Van Battenberg. I welcome your passion and point of view on our ever-changing industry. Your thoughts of the future may be more real than we think right now and something we need to keep an eye out for. Conceptually, it makes a lot of sense. Find additional links, bios, and the episode talking points at remarkableresults.biz/E334. Every week, the podcast archives grow to include the Town Hall Academy. Now, if you're a new listener, you've got to spend maybe 30 minutes on the podcast website, remarkableresults.biz, and discover the vast content library of under an hour audio lessons that just may improve your pathway to your own personal remarkable results. Carm Capriato here thanking you for listening. And here's a shout out from Gary Pontius Jr. from Toledo Auto Care, who dropped me a quick email with a big thanks for the Advisor Role Play podcast. That's Town Hall Academy 69. He says, "It was awesome, Carm. I used it last night for my team sales meeting. Keep it coming." Sure will, Gary. Thanks. Don't forget, share this with a friend and talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.